Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hey everybody, it is Trags, and I'm thrilled to be back on CLNS Media, this time as host of Red Sox Beat. We'll be bringing you the latest and greatest news and nuggets and our breakdown of all things Red Sox. My first guest on the road back is longtime friend and colleague Ian Brown of MLB.com and, of course, RedSox.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian M. Brown with an E at the end. That's IanMBrowne. You can find us at CLNSmedia.com. Follow us on Twitter at RedSoxCLNS. This is a thrill, Ian. Great to be back, and it's great to have you on the inaugural or the restart of Red Sox Beat with yours truly. How's my newly vaccinated friend doing?
Yeah, I'm about an hour and a half off my second vaccination shot, so feels good right now.
Well, keep a glass of water by your side. And if
I got one right here.
That's good. That's very good. You've always been prepared. And how long have I known you?
Over 20 years.
You actually took my place at RedSox.com, and I moved on to other beats when I was in Boston, covering the Celtics at the time, as well as the Patriots. That's really when I started focusing in on the Patriots, and you took over covering the Red Sox, and obviously that was the magic trick, because a couple of years later, they won the World Series.
it was all me. But this is my 20th year on the Red Sox beat. And, I think I had met you at a Celtics game or something.
Yes.
Before that even, or a Patriots game or something.
Yeah, our paths have crossed. I actually didn't know you actually covered the Stanley Cup playoffs back in 96, if I'm remembering this correctly, the Panthers and the Avalanche. Is that right?
Yeah. It was a great, great series. Triple overtime, game four.
Yeah, I do remember that. But back to baseball, that's why I have you on. It has been a really impressive restart. Alex Cora 2.0 for these Red Sox. After play on Sunday, the loss to Philadelphia 6-2, Red Sox still stand 29-19, tied with the surging Tampa Bay Rays atop the American League East. Tampa Bay winning 10 in a row to catch up with the Red Sox. They've been playing red hot baseball, and look out, the New York Yankees are starting to mash the ball like Ian all thought they would. And right now you've got a three-team race atop the AL East.
Yeah, I've been really impressed the way the Red Sox have sort of hung in there, because, you know, especially the Yankees, they don't really match up on paper with the Yankees, but the Red Sox are just kind of one of those teams that are doing it with a true team effort right now, led by a manager who, it's been a huge factor having Alex Cora back in the dugout. But they just have a bunch of grinders, you know. Tracks, you've seen, you've seen Red Sox teams like this before who you didn't exactly expect.
2013 comes to mind, actually.
2013, you know, I was thinking back in your wheelhouse, like 1999, those kind of teams where this team wasn't necessarily looked at great on paper going into the year, but there's just something about them. They have a great chemistry. They have great character. And right now, every time it seems like they're going to slip, they come back and then reel off a few wins in a row.
All right. Obviously, Alex Cora returned from his MLB imposed suspension. And what has been the biggest difference when you watch him? And obviously, because of the pandemic, and we're still, as media members, restricted to just meetings like this in terms of our interaction with players and managers. What can you gather from his calming influence and the way he handles the team that's a little bit different than Ron Renicky?
Yeah, and nothing against Renicky, who I think had a bad hand. He was dealt a bad hand last year. There wasn't a whole lot he could do with that. But Cora just has a special way with these guys where he's able to push their buttons. He knows how to motivate them. He knows how to, he knows what they're going through. He knows how to kind of speak their language, and that's to the Spanish guys. That's to the American guys. That's to all the guys, really. And he just knows what each guy needs. And, it really took about 1 or 2 days until he was back to really see the impact he was having. That's how wide reaching he is. And it's just his way of communicating. And I think that he's just very real in his communications, and that guys want to play for him. Guys want to do anything for him. And it's just really the culture that he sets with this team.
I think accountability is a big part of this, Ian. And it starts with him, right? I mean, you can't ask your players to be accountable unless you're accountable. And everybody knows what Alex Cora had to own when he returned to the Red Sox. And I thought in January, when they reintroduced him, he spent a good deal of time doing exactly that, the whole cheating scandal with Houston and what happened in his first year in Boston.
Yeah, look, Alex Cora could not have handled that situation any better than he did, where I think a lot of people in that situation would just be like, pull the Mark McGwire, I'm not here to talk about the past, right. kind of thing.
And that wouldn't fly here. I mean, just would not work, given the severity and the significance of the situation.
Right, and he's just been extremely accountable and saying he knows how much he screwed up, and he's so grateful for the second chance. He didn't know that Chaim Bloom was going to give him that second chance. So when he got it, I think he just said, look, I'm going to show how grateful I am. And he's just really going to embrace this second chance he has to manage this team. I think he's not going to take it for granted at all. He's going to appreciate each day. And his enthusiasm, it just jumps out at you every day, even on these Zoom calls we have. He's on every day. There's never a day where he seems, kind of like tired or run down. He loves what he's doing, and he's, he's embracing the highs. He's not getting too impacted by the lows. He's glad to be going through the whole process again.
I think that's impressive, Ian, considering that it's one thing to do that in a clubhouse setting or when you're interacting with us like he did back in 2018 on a day-to-day basis. It's totally another to try and convey that across these Zoom calls. And, the calls that I've seen and the highlights I've seen, it's exactly what you're describing. He just seems, he doesn't always have to be giddy, but he seems energized in getting another chance with a team that he knows very well.
Yeah, I think that he's really, when you have something, we all know in life, you have something taken away from you. You appreciate it a little bit more when you get it back. And that's what I'm reading with Alex Cora. That's what I'm seeing in him. And even in 2019, things didn't go great. He could be like a little bit snippy or defensive at times. Really not at all this year. He's just, like I said, he's just so grateful to be back in the spot. Because when you're sitting home suspended for a year, you don't know how that's going to pan out. You don't know what your future is going to be. And just for him to wind up back with this team, and to have them, because he loves Boston, Mark. He could run up with another managerial job. He loves
this question.
His daughter's going to BC in the fall, and he just loves kind of all things Boston. So he loves the passion of Boston, because it's very much like where he grew up in Caguas, Puerto Rico, where it's just baseball 24/7. So he's just he's so happy to be back that he's really conveying that he's putting all his energy into the job.
Kind of like all of us love Ian Brown with RedSox.com. I can certainly vouch for that. Speaking with Ian Brown of MLB.com, follow all of his terrific work on RedSox.com, which is, of course, under the umbrella of MLB.com. Hey, sports fans, bet online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season, of course, is in full swing, and you can track all of the action at BetOnline. Get the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, and NHL, with those two leagues having their playoffs fully underway. And also get in on all of your UFC and MMA action, real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all of the news, scores, and odds. It's the very best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or your mobile device and take advantage of the 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and take advantage of the 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Back with Ian Brown of MLB.com and RedSox.com. All right, you mentioned Chaim Bloom, Red Sox president of baseball operations, I believe is the correct title, right, Ian?
Yeah, chief baseball officer.
Chief baseball officer, because nowadays you don't know whether he's a GM, chief baseball director of baseball operations. Dave Dombrowski, if I recall, he had the director of baseball operations title.
President of baseball operations for Dombrowski.
Eventually, I'll get it right.
It's hard to keep track of all this stuff, though. They're all just GMs.
Yeah, essentially, for all intents and purposes, they're all GMs. They're running the baseball ship. And the reason I bring up Chaim Bloom is he made a lot of changes, I think, you know, somewhat maybe, and I think the perception is at the direction of ownership to get under the salary cap. And he, you know, let a couple of players walk up. We all know we've rehashed Mookie Betts a million times. I'm not going to do that right now. But, you know, he also traded away Andrew Benintendi for Franchy Longbaum Cordero, who did have – I loved your piece Sunday on MLB.com about just how long that home run was.
Kind of put it in that was impressive, man. It was like he put out all his frustration he had for the entire season in that one swing and just absolutely killed that ball.
The cynics would say when he does eventually hit the ball, it goes a long, long way. And it did on Sunday in Philadelphia in that 6-2 loss. But he's remade, Chaim Bloom has remade the roster. And, you know, I think the Red Sox and Bloom are very fortunate that the guys who have stayed around, the obvious ones, Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, J.D. Martinez, and to a degree, Alex Verdugo, they've really helped carry the Red Sox while these other guys find their footing that have been brought in the offseason.
Yeah, no question. But, you know, I think Chaim Bloom deserves some credit because he took a lot of heat when he took over for, you know, people are saying, oh, he's just going to turn this into the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, with ownership, it wasn't simply cutting payroll. It was more rebuilding the foundation because the farm system had really slipped.
Yep.
Just needed to rebuild the depth in the organization. So, you know, as far as like, you know, the Mookie Betts thing, it is a place you need to start because look, they had a decision to make. Are we going to take our chances that we can sign this guy in the offseason where we know we're not willing to go $450 million or whatever it was he signed for? We're willing to go 300, maybe 350 max. Are we willing to just roll the dice and let him walk for nothing? Or do we want to trade him now when we can still get something for him? You look back at what they got Verdugo, who's one of their best players right now, and they still have him. I think he's under team control for 4 more years. And they got Jeter Downs, who's their second or third ranked prospect right now, and another versatile catcher in Connor Wong, who could end up being a decent major leaguer. So you made a pretty good trade right there once you made the decision that you couldn't afford to roll the dice with Mookie. You thought you were going to lose him for free agency. And then you see some of the other moves he made where, you know, he traded Brandon Workman and Heath Hembree at the deadline last year. And both those guys have done absolutely nothing since they left. And he got Nick Pivetta and Connor Siebold, who's a prospect, a righty prospect. And Pivetta has been probably their best pitcher so far this year.
Biggest surprise. I mean,
it was a tremendous surprise because this guy had underachieved for years in Philadelphia. And he was the quintessential guy who maybe just needed a change of scenery. And he's really brought into the Red Sox. He's brought into their pitching philosophy. And, you know, it looks like a great trade. And the funny thing is now they have Workman back in their minor league system after the Cubs released him. So now Now maybe even get Workman back. So you traded, you know, basically this trade was a huge home run, no matter what happens from here. And some of the move, you know, he got Garrett Richards this offseason. He had a rocky start, his first four starts. He's been excellent ever since. So you see why they made that move. Kike Hernandez, signed him as a free agent. You kind of seeing what the energy he brings on a daily basis. Hunter Renfro, offense has been inconsistent, but boy, his
defense is right there. I mean, look, he was filling huge shoes defensively for JBJ. And, you know, I've had a chance here in Cincinnati to see some of the National League action. JBJ just came through Cincinnati over the weekend, and he can still track the ball better than any center fielder I've ever seen. So for Hunter Renfro to be able to come into those shoes in Boston and play the way he has defensively has just been a huge boost.
Yeah, and you know, Trags, right field at Fenway is different too. You need a, you know, somebody who's a center fielder caliber out there to cover all that ground. He's done a great job, not just with the range, but his arm is just impressive. I didn't know he had that good of an arm. So, you know, that was another, that's you pay $3 million for this guy. So he did, Heimblum did some bargain shopping. You know, it's paid dividends already. Even Martin Perez at the bottom of the rotation, you know, a lot of people thought they were going to pick up his $6.75 million option at the end of the year. They declined that option and re-signed him for $4 million. I think he's got about a 3.5 ERA right now. So he's just made some shrewd moves here. And he's just kind of, you know, this isn't, as he put it in the offseason, this isn't a go for broke year for the Red Sox. This is a year to sort of rebuild the foundation, add some depth, bolster the minor league system a little bit. Try to compete at the major league level at the same time, and they've done that. Do I think this team's going to win the World Series? You know, I don't think so, but they're going to be competitive, which is all you can really ask for, at especially after last year.
The bats have to stay hot, Ian. I mean, as good as they've been, and you know, they're right at the top of the major leagues with, I believe, after Sunday's action, 65 home runs. How about this stat? And you know, I love the work that the Red Sox PR does in compiling these, and this props out to Justin Long. I'm a big Justin Long fan. The Red Sox are out-homering their opponents 63-34 plus 29. That's the largest difference in MLB. That's a big reason they're 29-19.
Yeah, and I don't know what's more impressive about that stat, Trags, is the fact that they've hit 63 or that they've only allowed 34, because the pitching staff doesn't have quite as much raw talent as the offense, I think. But what happened is Dave Bush, combined with Jason Veritek, I think having Jason Veritek on the full-time staff as what they call the game planning coordinator, where he's really gotten back to what he did as a player and helping the pitchers game plan these starts. I think that's played a big, I think Jason Veritek maybe isn't getting as much credit as he deserves for the start this team is off to. You saw it when he was a player, the way they always maximize that pitching staff, and you're seeing it again. But yeah, that is impressive that they can hit home runs and, you know, and not allow them.
Not give them up. I'll tell you what, as a one-time catcher, not just on the media team in our media league with the New York Riders, but the thing that impresses me about that, and where I think you have to give Jason Veritek a lot of credit in working with the staff, like you said, is not giving in. Because I think really 70% of home runs come when pitchers give in and they're trying to get a strike over the plate in a batter's count. And I think Jason Veritek is working with these pitchers to make sure that their mentality isn't to give in so easily. And that's why those home run numbers are lower.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. They're really sort of, they're doing a great job of painting the corners. They're making their pitches. You know, you're seeing Matt Barnes the other night with the game on the line. He threw four straight curveballs, you know, this is a guy who has a 98 mile an hour fastball. He threw four straight curveballs to get a game ending strikeout. I think it was against Reese Hoskins there in Philadelphia. But yeah, just the way they're game planning, they're doing an excellent job on that pitching staff.
What about, you mentioned Matt Barnes. He's been one of the huge reasons this Red Sox team is off to the start they're off to. 11 saves, a 0.63 whip, I believe it is.
Yeah.
He's just, you know, really doing a great job of locating the ball on the edges, like you said, and not giving in. And I think that was, you know, one of his issues. You know, his only blip on the radar screen came to the baseball's best, most dynamic player in Shohei Ohtani on that Sunday afternoon. That's been it. I mean, he's been perfect.
Yeah, and even the Ohtani thing, you know, it was two outs in the ninth, and he just gave up a bloop to Trout that it was one of these analytic shifts where Chavis was playing second base and he was on the shortstop side of the bag at this little blooper fell into short right field. It's an easy pop up to the second baseman if they're playing a standard defense. So, and it's almost like he should have had the save in that game too. But he's just, the key with Barnes is that he's ahead in the count all the time, Trags. Where he used to fool around and he'd be down 2-0, he'd be walking guys, and Veritek and some other guys just pointed out some analytics to him that you know, if you go strike one on these guys, he showed them the amount of times that you're going to get outs versus when you don't. So he's really just bought into that, and he's just strike one on everybody now.
To me, not to cut you off, but this is kind of a bugaboo with me. To me, that's not analytics, that's more probability. And that's always been a truism in baseball, especially for relievers, when your exposure to these hitters is limited to one time. You get to face them one time. If you don't get ahead of them, strike one, strike two. And when Red Sox or any team's bullpen has always struggled, it's when they have a tendency to fall behind in the count and fiddle around on the edges and not locate.
Yeah, no, for sure, Trax. And the reason why I said analytics is just because it was pointed out to Barnes, like the exact percentage of kind of what happens when you get that first pitch strike versus when you don't. So when he saw that, he's like, those are great odds. I would play those odds.
Right.
So, you know, then he just totally bought into that. And, you know, the difference between this guy, night and day, I don't think anybody, we all came into spring training wondering who the closer was going to be. Was it going to be Barnes? Was it going to be Ottavino? I think some of us thought that Barnes could do a decent job as a closer. Nobody saw this coming. I mean, he's been as good as any closer in baseball so far this year. And he's in a free agent year too. So he's positioning himself to make a lot of money in the offseason.
How do you read Nathan Eovaldi?
He's tough to read, man. It's just,
he is.
He's got a big pitch mix. He throws a bunch of different stuff. And some days he's really good. Some days he's not. He's one of these guys who throws as hard as anyone in baseball, but doesn't get a lot of swing and miss. He doesn't get a ton of swing and miss.
The ball's not moving. It's
yeah. Doesn't get a ton of strikeouts, but you know, you saw that in 2018, you saw that he's not afraid of the stage, right?
Nope.
So have him healthy, you know, going into October. There's certain guys, you know, Josh Beckett was another guy like this. There's certain guys who just kind of turn it up in October, and Eovaldi looked like that guy. So there, I'm healthy, and you'll take what he's giving you right now, where he's going to give you six innings pretty much every start, somewhere between 2 and 4 runs. Every now and then he'll have a clunker where he gives up 5 or 6, but he'll take it. You'll take his compete level. The key to him, the key with Eovaldi, is always just keeping him off the injured list. And so far this year, he's been nothing but healthy. So that's been good to see.
How much do you miss the clubhouse?
Quite a bit. It's a lot different. Just not getting a chance to talk to these guys. It was nice, at least in spring training. I got to go to spring training for about 3 weeks, and you would kind of see guys out in the backfield, so you could at least say hi to them. A little face-to-face interaction. They would actually, the Red Sox would set up some one-on-one sort of socially distanced interviews where we would be up on the those monster seats at JetBlue, and you'd have a guy about 12 feet from you with the tape recorder in the middle, and you'd have a conversation. So it was nice, but yeah, it's different covering a team and not having the, not having that daily access and just being kind of subject to who they bring out on a Zoom call. It's been tough. We're not to really be able to build any relationships with the new guys on the team. Like, you know, some guys, Martin Perez, other than spring training last year, really haven't talked to him face to face. You know, it's all on Zoom, so that's been a little strange. But I think that maybe after the All-Star break, hopefully we can get a little bit more back to normal and then bring back some more of the in-person access.
Is that what you're hearing or what you think might happen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how they're going to phase it back, Trags. I think a lot of it depends on how many of these teams get to the 85% vaccination threshold. The Red Sox aren't there yet. They think they might be getting close. Once teams get to that, they can sort of loosen their protocols a little bit. But, you know, I think that maybe at least in the second half, you know, Alex Cora's press conference will be able to do that in person. Maybe players will come into the interview room, be able to talk to them there rather than on Zoom. I don't know if the clubhouse is going to open this year.
I wouldn't guess so. I mean, I think, and I have no problem with that in terms of playing it safe and error on the side of caution with regard to that. But I think, I don't know if I believe this, but a couple of the Reds who are very good with the media, and the dynamic here in Cincinnati is a lot different. I'll grant you that. But a couple of them have joked, you know, we miss you guys as well. Has there been any of that with the Red Sox?
Not too much, Trags. Not too much. Because, you know how these guys are in Boston. It's just kind of, it's such a fishbowl that I think.
It is.
You know, a guy like Xander Bogaerts, I don't think he would mind having us around. But, you know, I think for the other, many other guys on the team, I think it's nice to not have to worry about us, to tell you the truth. And I think maybe that, Rob Bradford.
Rob Bradford.
Yeah, our good friend Rob Bradford. I think he thinks, he had espoused that he thinks that maybe this is the reason why the Red Sox are playing so well, is because they don't
know what to deal with. I'd buy that a little bit, actually, Ian. We laugh it off or, kind of write it off as a joke. But I think there's a lot to be said for that, especially in the market like Boston, where you have so many reporters and so much media in a very tight footprint. And, a lot of fans have never been in that clubhouse or around that clubhouse, around these players. And when you have a crowded situation in your workspace, you're going to be more tense and it's going to take you a little bit more effort to relax, don't you think? Naturally.
Yeah, it seemed to be human nature. And, Boston's just such a unique animal. I think you look at Boston and New York as the two places that are so different than anywhere else in the country, anywhere else in baseball, media coverage-wise, the way that the team is covered. So, yeah, I think that, you got a Red Sox team that's not infested by us reporters every day. And, they're going to be a little bit more relaxed.
Everything good with your family, Amy? Kids?
Oh, family's great. Amy's teaching second grade down the street. My youngest is going to Temple in the fall.
Not Villanova.
Yeah, not. I'm sorry. I was on the. They rejected him. So. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to bring up a sore.
No, Temple was his first choice anyway. So he's excited. But everybody's doing great.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you back, Ian. It brings a smile to my face because, the players know that you kick them in the ass with tough questions all the time. So I'm glad to see that I can get you in a relaxed state. That's a joke, by the way. Really executed joke, but it's a joke. Ian Brown is one of the classiest, most well-liked reporters that's ever covered the Red Sox. And I don't think that's hyperbole.
I appreciate that, Trax. We try to keep it real with them. They know they can trust me. They know I'm going to ask fair questions. And I think I've done that through the years.
I think you have. And you've done an excellent job. Continue to read Ian Brown on MLB.com and RedSox.com. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code for betonline.com, CLNS50, to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Want to thank everybody for downloading today's podcast. Thank our terrific guest, Ian Brown of MLB.com, doing bang-up work covering the Red Sox all year long. Follow him on Twitter at Ian M. Brown with an E at the end, and don't forget the M in the middle, all one word. Also want to thank our great sponsor, betonline.ag. I'm Mike Petralia, and this has been the Red Sox Beat Podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Network.